So one of the questions that often comes up kind of on the back end of so much beautiful advocacy that we had from 2012 to 2020, the Black Lives Matter movement, we had a definitive finger pointing at a clear social injustice of police brutality. We had great literature, academic literature that was beginning to be written, had been written for decades, but really got traction and got mainstream eyeballs about how the incarcerated system in America was incredibly prejudiced and incredibly discriminatory towards certain people groups. We had massive protests in 2020, and all of this led to a really great understanding, honestly, a better understanding, I would say, of how minorities are being treated in the American context, how the prison industrial complex feasts on minorities and uses it and uses us for labor, to subdue, to relegate. All of this great knowledge and great activism was going on, but there was kind of a looming question underneath all of it that still is kind of a creeping question in the background. And it's, well, can minorities be racist in a racist society like America? Is it possible for minority groups to be racist within a national context of a racist system and a racist hierarchy that is opposed to them? Can they themselves actually be racist? So I want to start off with, I understand that the question normally comes in bad faith. I understand that oftentimes when people ask this question, they are attempting to make a kind of a social equivalence of the black person who's racist towards an Asian person in their community with the white supremacist behavior that happens in broader society that adversely affects a large group of minority communities. So I understand that the question is normally in bad faith, and I understand that the question is normally asked by people who desire to just kind of universally say, well, everyone's racist, so on an interpersonal level, let's just kind of all get along and get past that. So with that understanding that the question is normally in bad faith, I don't think that that means that we should not entertain the question and that we should not have in-depth kind of analysis of what it actually means to be racist and how we should be critiquing racism in many sectors of society and not simply and exclusively white supremacist racism. So I kind of want to break that down because I do think that this is going to become more and more of a relevant conversation in the future. And I think it has already become, on the international scale, a very relevant conversation. So first off, there was early on kind of a simple, elementary, kind of colloquial definition of racism that was, kind of a quick, easy to understand and engage with definition of racism, that racism was prejudice plus power. So everyone has prejudices. But if you have the power to execute that prejudice, then that is what distinguishes you from simply being a person with prejudice to being a person who is racist. Okay. I would prefer, and I think it is a much better historical definition and a much more adequate and accurate definition to the type of racism that we've experienced in the American context, to define racism as believing that another ethnic or social group is genetically or culturally inferior to your own. I think that is a much more appropriate definition, and I'm going to continue to explain why. For starters, minority groups do have social power. They're not powerless. They are just not as powerful as white people or as some other minority groups. Okay, so a lot of black people in America have power. We see this power displayed in the entertainment industry. We see it on the corporate and business level. We see it at the electoral level. As an anecdote, and I feel like anecdotes are still important, even if they're not exhaustive. I've worked in multiple organizations where there has been black leadership that was just as detrimental to the black and minority life within that space as any white supremacist that could have been in that position. Okay. And so black people have a significant amount of power. Other minority groups have a significant amount of power in the American context. They're not powerless. We aren't powerless. We're just not as powerful, or we don't have the amount of social influence and power, particularly than white people have. Okay. So I think that gets tricky when you simply want to minimize the definition of racism to prejudice plus power, because a lot of people have experienced minorities in power who have prejudices, and that has affected their experience within that space, and within society broadly. And so let's kind of go back to what racism is at its core, which I believe is best defined by the definition that I have for racism, which is viewing another social or ethnic group as culturally or genetically inferior. It's kind of me just paraphrasing better definitions from academics and from the web and articles and Google and Wikipedia. But if you think all the way back to the abolitionist movement, and you think about what they were actually confronting when they were confronting racism and when they were trying to push forward and enact emancipation, in the mainline understanding of abolition, it was slavery's bad. That was the core fundamental thought, was, well, slavery's bad. And even though we don't view Africans or slaves in the American context as fully human, because we think slavery's bad, we should push for emancipation. Those were not the purest and most potent advocates of abolition. The most potent advocates of abolition actually believed any racial essentialism, which is bad. If you essentialized a group to a core set of tropes or caricatures or ideas, whether positive or negative, that was just bad. That people are individuals, that people are a part of social groups, those social groups affect them, those social groups help categorize people within a national context, but that they are not the sum of being in that social group. The purest abolitionists during the Civil War and during the battle for emancipation were against all racial essentialization, which would mean that they would say, no, black people deserve to be free because they're people, and people shouldn't be enslaved. They are fully equal people. Now, of course, this was a minority amongst abolitionist thinkers at the time. But they would have also said, and also, white people are not inherently slave masters, evil, white supremacists. They are only as bad as they lean into the racial ideas of white supremacy that they have. So they're not in and of themselves based off being born white evil. they're evil if they lean into white supremacist ideas, racial hierarchy ideas. And so with that kind of grounded foundational understanding, I think it is important to revisit a lot of conversations that we have about race in this country. I don't think that there is any equivalence to black racism to white racism in America. If a white person is racist, the chances, it's not just the chances, they will have more social impact on the object of their racism because of the nature of the amount of power and influence that white people have in this country and the history of racism in this country. But that doesn't mean that a person who is a minority cannot also view other groups, even white people, as genetically or culturally inferior to themselves. And so when other groups do that, that also has, I would argue here in a second, long-term effects and even short-term effects of trauma and of damage societally. One of the things that happens when a group has been degraded, maligned, viewed as lesser than, is oftentimes these groups form a lot of pride around their identity naturally because for the longest their identity was seen as a shameful thing. And that's a good thing. It's a mature thing and it's a correct thing. It's great to say I'm black and I'm proud, or I'm Hispanic and I'm proud, or I'm Jewish and I'm proud. That is a important and powerful thing in a context that has constantly told you that you are that your racial group is simply a sign of shame, degradation, and social inferiority. It is a good thing to carry a level of pride with that. But one of the dangerous things that I've seen come up, and I can only speak to the black community, I obviously see it in other communities, but I think that there's nuance in those conversations that I cannot bring, and so I'm not going to speak into other groups' prejudice and racism. But in the black community, one of the trends that I'm seeing is, one, identity cults, groups that are formed specifically around identity, and oftentimes, while that has an initial positive implications and initial positive desire, it normally transitions itself into a form of pride that can be a bastardized form of pride. A form of pride that says we shouldn't socialize outside of our race. We shouldn't date outside of our race, marry outside of our race. We should view other groups, particularly white people, as essentially and consistently dangerous, which I think is just bad logic and ultimately leads to bigger problems down the road. Black separatism and some forms, not all forms, but some forms of black nationalism are not healthy ideas in a democratic society. We fought for integrated spaces and equality, and it's going to take time for those spaces to actually be equal. But we can't go backwards into just new forms of segregation. there is power in minority groups consolidating resources in order and coming together to consolidate those resources in order to protect themselves in a larger white supremacist society. I don't think that there's anything evil in that. I do think that there's something incredibly evil in essentializing whiteness as evil and therefore telling your children, oh, don't be with who you love, or, oh, we don't associate with them, or, you know, oh, you know, they're dangerous, or any number of genuinely just minority segregationist ideas. There is nothing socially positive about that. And that is not combating white supremacy. That is just being prejudiced and racist against another individual or another group of people. And there's nothing healthy about that. You know, just a century ago, Jewish people were experiencing one of the most infamous forms of racial discrimination in human history, in the Holocaust. A century later, Israel, as a country, is now conducting a genocide. Powerless groups, or groups that aren't as powerful as the oppressor group that they are in the context within, whether it's in a nation or in a particular hemisphere or whatever, a state, you know, they do not remain not powerful. Eventually, they come into more and more, you know, kind of gradual accumulation of power. And when they do, if they still hold those racist and or prejudice ideas, they will execute them. Okay, so it is for our long-term good to nip a lot of this in the bud. And one of the trends that is remarkably frustrating that I see often is allies to the Black community, genuine leftists, people who believe in democracy, people who believe in civil rights, people who push for a more sophisticated understanding of sociology so that we can have a more equitable society and a more a society that has a better distribution of material resources and wealth, will oftentimes cop out of this conversation or show tremendous cowardice when they see a minority group displaying racist ideas or prejudiced ideas. And I have to say, that is not consistent with what you are trying to accomplish as someone who is pushing for an equitable society. You have no idea what that racism, and I won't go into detail on this episode, but you have no idea what that racism within that community group is doing to other members within that community group. Because it's often like when someone does racial essentialization, they often still do it to people within their own community. Like this is where you get all the silly tropes about Black people saying, well, that person's not really Black, which is just silly, because that Black person could just as easily be shot by a cop, could just as easily be prey to our unjust incarceral system, can just as easily be discriminated against in social settings. Oftentimes that Black person still carries a lot of the cultural and traditional heritages of Blackness. And so would you essentialize, period, you oftentimes find yourself being discriminatory to people within your own community, which is why it is important to call it out. And I know that the optics don't look great for a white person to look at a Hispanic person and say, hey, I think you're being racist. But no, I don't care about optics. Sometimes telling the truth is not going to look optimal. you just do it, and you do it with tact, and you do it obviously within certain circumstances. Sometimes you may not be the one delivering the message, but you point it out. Like, it is important that we move away exclusively from racial essentialization. Race matters on a sociological level because it is in many ways determinant of how people will experience material success and have, and what type of material outcomes they will have within a national setting. It also is a huge indicator of cultural traditions, of personal pleasures, likes, dislikes, you know, food choices, music choices, aesthetic choices, fashion choices. It is significant, but it cannot be determinant. Like, obviously not all black people are great athletes, great dancers, phenomenal cooks, and none of that works for any social group. Racial essentialization is just a negative thing within a society that, although it's going to take time and it's going to take people doing a lot of reading, it's going to take people asking a lot of questions, doing a lot of research, growing, having a more sophisticated understanding of sociology to engage with this stuff, it's not like an easy ask to start calling out minority racism or to have a more potent understanding of racism that you can use to have an appropriate metric to know when to call it out or at the very least to notice when it's happening. It's not an easy ask, but it's something that ultimately has to be done so that we can further a better, broader societal understanding of how to do race and how to do, honestly, just the social construct of race. And while I have controversial opinions about what we eventually should do with race, and I don't have time to go into that in this episode, I think it is important for us to have a better definition of what racism is. And ultimately, it is important for us to unilaterally call out racism when we see it, regardless of where it comes from, regardless of the immediate effects that it will have on society, because it's just wrong. And if something is wrong, inevitably it will permeate into a larger issue within any societal context.